there. It's Frank Buckley. This week, we're happy to welcome Sam Rubin back to Frank Buckley Interviews. As many of you know, he's been covering Hollywood for the KTLA 5 Morning News since 1991. He's one of the best in the business as a broadcaster and as a reporter, anchor, and critic in the world of entertainment. He is particularly busy right now because it's award season in Hollywood. This past weekend, Sam was at the Critics' Choice Awards, and every day he's screening films, doing research, and conducting interviews with awards nominees and those who aspire to be nominated. So what goes into being nominated, and how is Sam influenced, and who does he think will win in some of the major categories, like Best Actor and Actress and Best Film? You're about to find out. Here's my conversation with Sam Rubin. Sammy Rubin, thank you so much for coming back on Frank Buckley Interviews.
Very happy to be here. The setup has gotten much more lavish, frankly.
We're very fancy now, and it's wonderful to have you on the show again. We're right in the thick of awards season, and I was hoping that you could come on and sort of take us behind the scenes of what happens with the awards. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, the process. We see people on the red carpet, they win an award, and that's that. And you experience, as someone who can influence these awards, something very different. And it happens over the course of weeks and months.
Well, I tell you what, there's a phrase that is used a lot, that Hollywood is just like high school with money.
Right.
And I think award season is essentially the election for student body president, but with this extraordinary dollop of money and attention,
right,
and campaigning. And so just as an aside, and our friend Jessica Holmes attended one of these, I would say I have been invited to, beyond the point where I can count, well over a dozen screenings and Q&As with Bradley Cooper alone. Oh, does Monday not work for you? Perhaps you'd like to come Thursday. And so what they'll do for a variety of voting bodies.
And this is for A Star Is Born.
This is for A Star Is Born. So they will show the movie, and they presumably are showing it to voting body members. In my case, Critics' Choice, Screen Actors Guild, and of course the big one, the Oscars, the Motion Picture Academy. They'll show the movie, and then Bradley Cooper will walk out with or without a moderator. Our friend and colleague Scott Mance has a cottage business now. He moderates almost all of these. And take audience questions. And the idea is, hey, I'm not only going to show you my work, I'm going to talk to you about it. And, you know, Bradley Cooper, obviously extremely big, prominent personality and star. I'm going to take the time to try to win your vote. And it really is this ongoing campaigning. And last year, when Gary Oldman won for we always refer to him as the presumptive winner playing Winston Churchill.
Right.
I think he did dozens of those, literally dozens. And so there are these rules. Bradley Cooper can't take Sam Rubin out for dinner and hand an envelope under the table and buy my vote. That is restricted. But they can have a lovely cocktail reception or a lovely catered meal or a variety of things surrounding this type of thing. Another example of that ilk, which a lot of people are talking about, is Roma, which had extraordinary success at the Critics' Choice Awards. So I'm a voting member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association. And I would say for the last 2 weeks, almost every single day when I come home, there is something from Roma. There is one item they provided was a beautiful coffee table book of the photography of Roma. A signed poster from Alfonso Cuarón, different letters and notes and things like that. So they're kind of constantly at you.
Wow. And you're one person.
Right.
And granted, you're not only a voting member of the Broadcast Film Critics, but you're also an influencer in Hollywood. And so they're really coming after you. But presumably, if I'm a member of the Academy...
If you're a member of the Academy, well-known or anonymous, you're more valuable than me, as an example. Because all of this is geared towards the Oscars. And it's always been my feeling that despite a variety of missteps, that in terms of what one desires and in terms of what really matters, the Oscars are at a different tier.
Yeah.
So in other words, Golden Globes are great, Critics' Choice, great, Screen Actors Guild Award, fantastic. But the Oscars, in my head at least, and I think most people's, at a different level.
And that's a wonderful thing here in Hollywood. But, you know, you and I were discussing this article that was in the Hollywood Reporter today, that in which people are asked in a poll that they conducted, you know, can you name last year's Oscar Best Picture winner? And you pointed out that it was only 20% of Americans right. could find that.
Correct.
And the answer is
The Shape of Water, which, as it turned out, which has often been the case for Oscar winners. I like that movie tremendously. I think it's a terrific movie. Neither a big hit nor a movie that had extraordinary play across the country.
Yeah. And this article points out that none of the films claiming the top honor in the past 5 years have grossed more than $100 million at the box office domestically. Now, that's a lot of money to most people, $100 million. That's not a lot of money in the film business, where
Correct.
A big hit is a $1 billion hit, a worldwide
Right, a Black Panther right.
Is a $1 billion. Yeah. Dollars. Or, you know, certainly
many hundreds of millions
right,
of dollars.
$500 million.
Sure.
Those are the kinds of numbers that are considered big hits. So these are not big hits, and yet there's so much money and effort going into winning the Oscar, the Film Critics Award, the Golden Globe, whatever. Why?
Well, I'll give you several answers. Number one, and you know, sometimes, and I think this happens with the work that you do or any of us do, there are certain phrases that you find you're repeating yourself again and again. So I say this at this time of year, every year, the nomination is the win. Mm. To me, the nomination is the win.
Yeah.
So if you are in that conversation, that's enough. Certain people, and Ted Sarandos, the head of Netflix, apparently among them, he doesn't just want the nomination. He wants the win. He wants the win-win.
Yeah.
So I do think there is value in being included in this bulk of nominees. And so that value manifests itself in a variety of ways. Bohemian Rhapsody is a very good example. Mm. Fairly Good Life fall box office. It is now re-released based on its success at the Golden Globes, which was unanticipated and bigger than thought of. Mm-hmm. They're re-releasing it again. It's more. It gives it more life. And, you know, movies have, I would say, three lives now. They're the theatrical release. There is the, you know, the DVD. All this for The Star is Born is happening just while Star is Born is about to come out on DVD.
DVD still matters?
Yeah, I think DVD does matter. And then the streaming life, what mm-hmm. I was going to say. So okay. I DVD does not matter to the degree that it once did. Mm. But for certain movies, you could see an absolutely time campaign, you know, for Valentine's Day for A Star is Born. You know, give your lover a Star is Born, that kind of thing. Mary Poppins Returns would have a much
yes.
longer life, that type of thing. So I do think it's helpful. And I think there is a battle of, you know, of egos. And then the one thing that Netflix is trying to prove, and I think Roma is with an exclamation point. There, Netflix is trying to say to all these filmmakers, hey, look, artists, you can make the most artistically daring movie that you want, and we will not only fund it and support it and stream it, but we'll do everything to bring additional, what I will describe as legitimate attention to it. Mm. And so Roma's an absolute test case. That Roma, if Alfonso Cuarón had done this through an independent film company, I can't imagine it would get a tenth of the attention it's gotten because of this unprecedented, expensive push that Netflix has put behind it.
Mm. And it also goes to this idea of theatrical versus release on a Netflix or an Amazon, the digital release.
Right.
And the tension between the studios, the exhibitors, these are the people who run
theater
the
owners.
Movie theaters,
yeah.
and the online services like Netflix and Amazon. And this clash, and I want to get to that in a second,
okay.
but I want to go back to something you just said a second ago, and you sort of just touched on it, but you said the word ego. And I wonder how much of this sort of striving for awards is about saying to these big egos in this town, you know, we want to make sure you get an Academy Award. We want to make sure you have a Golden Globe on your shelf. And if you come work with us, we're going to do everything to get you that. Does that matter?
Oh, I think it matters tremendously. And I think what happens sometimes is, and back to Gary Oldman from last year, that was sort of preordained. And I would actually make the equation for Christian Bale this year. hey, if you could really pull off being Dick Cheney, you don't look anything like Dick Cheney, you're 40 years younger than Dick Cheney. If you can become Dick Cheney, I bet you that's going to get you an Oscar, which actually I think it will.
Right.
So
no, he's amazing as Dick Cheney.
He's unbelievable as Dick Cheney. And so I find it's going to be very difficult to unseat him. I think he's the clear front runner to me in that particular race. Mm. But I think the person who gets the sort of the modern Oscar campaigner, who has now been sort of disgraced to a large degree, Harvey Weinstein. And
right.
The idea is, and I'm sure there is math behind this, Harvey Weinstein does Shakespeare in Love at a mid-level budget. It makes mid-level box office. He adds extra budget to campaign. He succeeds. It wins. It gets Oscar attention. And consequently, certainly the value of the film increases. I would say it increases beyond what he spent to get the Oscar.
Right. And also it really propelled Miramax to this place.
Yes.
when it was run by the Weinstein brothers. And was that sort of the first campaigning? Because pre that era, the 90s.
Right.
How did they do it?
I don't feel there was this degree of the famous sort of demarcation story is a name that will make you chuckle and that you and maybe some of the listeners might know. Do you remember the singer and actress Pia Zadora?
Of course.
So Pia Zadora.
There's my chuckle.
See, Pia Zadora had a very, very rich husband.
Right.
And he decided that she should not only be nominated but win a Golden Globe for, gosh, I think the movie was called Butterfly, but I don't even remember. So the Golden Globe voting body is less than 90 people.
Yeah.
They were all flown to Europe and given a European vacation.
My
to
goodness.
See the movie, to spend time with Pia Zadora. And sure enough, she was nominated and sure enough, she won. And people said, hey, look, you bought that win.
Right.
That it sort of disgraced the Golden Globes.
Right.
And it actually took the Golden Globes several years to recover from that. But that is the most blatant example. I would say from the time that I have been doing this, I have certainly been aware of cocktail parties, screenings, Q&As. But one thing that's, I would say, new in the last 5 or 10 years is that there's two people I know by name, and names I'll certainly mention, who are professional award consultants. It's their year-round business. One is a very nice guy named Tony Angelotti, who's been responsible for a lot of Oscars. The person who's said to be the very best at this is a woman named Lisa Tabak. And Lisa Tabak had her own firm. She worked for a variety of studios. Lisa Tabak was hired in 2018 by Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So she now does this magic voodoo, whatever she does, just for them.
Yeah.
So
that thing that happened with the Golden Globes, isn't it essentially 87 or 88 members of the
Hollywood Foreign Press. So the Hollywood-based reporter for the Reykjavik Daily.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that some sort of – isn't that an outsized influence of what those people – I mean, look, everyone's important
in
Los Angeles and in Hollywood. But 88 people are – do they set the agenda for
I don't think they are agenda setters, and they constantly make examples. That movie, The Tourist, which was terrible with Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie a couple years back.
Right.
When they were both nominated, it's like, this movie's awful. And you're only doing this because you want stars of that caliber to attend your ceremony.
Right.
That was kind of a ridiculous re-reminder of how these things can be. The name – I would tell you the biggest name in the award season sphere right now is Lady Gaga.
Mm.
And what's interesting to me is, and I'm sure there are those who could speak to this, I would say Lady Gaga, obviously, you know, huge musical superstar, et cetera. But her music career in slight decline, not as big as she was. Last album, not a huge hit, et cetera. But A, she's really good in A Star is Born, and it's a really good story. And I think people do love these Cinderella stories. So the two that I think which will propel the Oscars to increased attention are the whole Lady Gaga saga. And I think Black Panther will be nominated for Best Picture. I'd be kind of stunned if it wasn't.
Mm.
And consequently, Black Panther is one of those rare movies, the four-quadrant billion-dollar movies. I think kind of everybody's seen it, mm-hmm. or most everybody has seen it. And at last, a Marvel movie is being acknowledged, et cetera. So I think there's kind of a rooting interest in that. And you know, for example, you promise you this, the cast of Black Panther will be presenters at the Oscars, things mm-hmm. like that. So, you know, Black Panther has been seen by, let's make up a number, 25, 50, 100 times the number of people that saw Shape of Water.
Right.
You know, at least. So I think that the Oscar ratings tend to track with the popularity of the movies.
And the Oscar ratings over the past several years have been in decline,
and
right?
Moonlight is a very, very good movie. I don't think anybody's ever seen Moonlight. I think very few people have seen it. The winner of Best Picture, not year, but the year before.
Mm-hmm.
What happens sometimes, and people suggest it's, you know, New York and Los Angeles versus the rest of the country. By the way, to be eligible for Oscar attention, you have to play 1 week theatrically in both LA and New York. And that's it. You don't have to play in Des Moines.
Yeah.
And so I think that you know, I think a lot of people would tell you that show business for the most part is centered on the coasts, and you do skip or ignore a lot of the rest of the country.
And that goes to the point that many people believe the Academy is completely out of touch with the rest of the country, if
right.
not the world. That that these films and their precious approach to the awards ceremony and keeping you guys and now charging $1 zillion to have a place on the red carpet, and a number of things that they've done over the past few years really speak to how out of touch the Academy is. You know, the Oscars So White campaign, you know, you could throw that in there as well. Do you think that has changed? I mean, there's been a lot of criticism of the Academy over the past few years. Is it starting to realize, oh, we're in a bubble and maybe we should sort of look outside of the bubble?
I think the Academy has made definitive strides in changing the body, the voting body of the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So they have certainly this absolutely atypical Academy member in their mid to late 60s, white male, that kind of thing. And they have opened up the floodgates to include younger members, to include a much more diverse membership. So that is slowly and surely changing. And they've made absolutely definitive steps to do that. And I have some, you know, kind of insider friends who were involved with all this stuff. And the year of Oscar So White, the Academy was aware of the nominations the night before. And that stuff is very sacrosanct. They're not going to change it. But they kept talking to the accountants about, are you sure you counted it right? You know, is there, and the accountant, I remember using the phrase, kept saying, it's not the way we count it. It's not the count, because they knew they had a problem.
Mm.
And so, you know, I think if, you know, for example, the Best Picture for Critics' Choice nominees included Black Panther and Black Klansman and Green Book and If Beale Street Could Talk. So I don't know that you're going to have all three of those movies included in the Oscar Best Picture list, but if you don't have Black Panther or Black Klansman or If Beale Street Could Talk, I think people will be very upset, understandably so.
Mm. You touched on something a moment ago about this idea of a film has to play in New York or L.A.
Mm. Both, actually. Yeah.
Both, to be considered for an Academy
right.
Award.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are wondering aloud about Roma, which, yes, is playing in a number of theaters.
Sure.
But it's also, I subscribe to Netflix,
mm-hmm.
and I can see it on Netflix.
Right.
And so is it fair for a Roma to be in this same conversation for this particular award, since it's a digital property as well as a theatrical release? And then the other question is, is that a disturbing trend for people in the film business that, you know, that Netflix says, look, come work for us and you're going to have this huge platform, but you're going to watch it on your TV. And yeah, we'll show it on a few places in theaters. There is this tension about that. Talk to
me. I think tension is the right word, but I tell you what. So I'll use myself as an example. Netflix very much wants me to see Roma. They want to make sure I see it and have the complete Roma experience.
Yeah.
I get a variety of invitations. I go to the Netflix building in Hollywood adjacent to our own KTLA studios, And I see Roma in a beautiful physical theater mm-hmm. that is Netflix's own theater. Mm. So they know, Netflix themselves know, that they could have, you know, sent me a code so I could watch it on my TV at home. They could have sent me a DVD so I could have watched it on a computer here at the station. That particular movie, and I think this is true of many, many movies, is best seen and best experienced in a big theater with, you know, big physical screen. So even Netflix admits that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you, one, the vast majority of movies, the way the vast majority of voting members consume movies are on DVDs at home. So one thing that strikes me, and I think of the movie Spotlight as an example, certain movies play really well at home mm-hmm. and they don't have these amazing visuals. They have a really compelling story and you could kind of watch them in any fashion and it would be just as well. So I think that's sort of a hidden advantage, whereas you would think it would be kind of the opposite, that the Dr. Zhivago, the big giant movie, the big movie,
yeah.
should have the advantage. But when people vote, they vote because they're generally watching it on a TV at home. If, in fact, Black Panther is not nominated, that could be a reason why, because it's better big.
Absolutely.
And as far as this sort of ongoing tension, both Netflix and Amazon, and by the way, Amazon has teamed with several companies and has had better award success. But what they do is Amazon runs it theatrically solely and then puts it on their services. Manchester by the Sea, several other movies that Amazon Prime has been involved with. So they have what I'll describe as a two-step process: theatrical, theatrical, theatrical. Then it goes to their service. Netflix is trying to do both. If Roma is unsuccessful, some might suggest one reason it is unsuccessful, and I think there is a large body of voters that feel this way. Hey, it's a great movie, blah blah blah. We don't want to endorse this idea. We don't want the idea that streaming TV, movie are all the same, because they're not the same.
Mm. In the major categories, who do you like the most and who do you think is going
well,
to win?
What I thought we could do here, I actually pulled the list because it most closely dovetails what's going to likely happen in the Oscars.
Okay.
So the Screen Actors Guild Awards are not this coming weekend, but the following weekend.
Okay.
And this really tends to dovetail the Oscars because most actors, if you have any degree of experience, are members of the acting branch of the Academy. So it's kind of the same body. Also, numerically, there are more actors than anybody else.
Okay.
So in any event, we'll take that category. Outstanding performance by a male actor in a supporting role: Mahershala Ali in Green Book, Timothy Chalamet in Beautiful Boy, Adam Driver in Black Klansman, Sam Elliott in A Star is Born, Richard E. Grant in Can You Ever Forgive Me? Okay, so there's 10 different ways to evaluate this. Mahershala Ali and Timothy Chalamet both, even though they're in the supporting category, they're effectively on screen as much as anybody. Adam Driver, who I like very much and I think is a very good actor, the nomination's the win. He doesn't need any more than that. Mm. That's that. Sam Elliott, that, and our friend Tom O'Neill from Gold Derby, who is deeply steeped in this stuff, would tell you Sam Elliott has a really good chance because that's a career achievement award. Sam Elliott is of a certain age, is very well thought of. He was very good in the movie. He's not in it very much. And Richard E. Grant is the nicest guy in the world,
right,
and has made that apparent.
How do you choose?
To me, Mahershala Ali also, one other element about all this is I think all these bodies like a good winner. So Regina King has been the best winner so far. She was great at the Golden Globe. She was great at Critics' Choice.
Yeah.
Perhaps second only to her, Mahershala Ali is a great winner.
Yeah.
So I would say there, I'll tell you, for Critics' Choice, I voted for Mahershala Ali and he won. I would say it's Mahershala Ali or Sam Elliott if it's that career achievement thing.
Okay.
So that's what I would say.
Let's go to supporting actress.
Supporting actress in a supporting role. Here we go. Amy Adams in Vice, Emily Blunt in A Quiet Place, Margot Robbie in Mary, Queen of Scots, Emma Stone in The Favorite, Rachel White's in The Favorite.
Impossible. There's so many good performances.
I really thought, though, they're all good. I really thought, and this also has something else to do with it, and calendar has something to do with it. So the latest of these releases, the one I saw the most recently, is Amy Adams and Vice, and they think that benefits you. Mm. Clint Eastwood always does that. He always sneaks his movies out at late November, December. Mm. I thought she was really good in Vice. I thought she was very powerful in
Vice.
She was. She was really, really good.
But the women in The Favorite
were all...
Oh, my goodness.
Terrific. Yeah. They were all very, very good. So how do you choose? And do they cancel each other out? The one who I tell you is not going to win would be Margot Robbie. People didn't really like that Mary Queen of Scots movie. Mm-hmm. And in a way, already... Margot Robbie, she's already won.
Yeah.
And she's young and she'll win 10 more times. So she doesn't need to win. And Emily Blunt, A Quiet Place, was actually thought of much more highly than Mary Poppins. Mm. So I think Amy Adams is going to win.
Okay.
This is the one that I would think would win.
Shall we go to Best Actor, Best Actress?
Sure. Best Actor, performance by a male actor in a leading role.
Right.
Christian Bale in Vice, Bradley Cooper in A Star is Born, Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, Viggo Mortensen in Green Book, John David Washington in Black Klansman. John David Washington, of course, is Denzel Washington's son. All great performances. To me, it's no question. It's Christian Bale kind of in a walk. And then, you know, there's all these different evaluations, sort of degree of difficulty. Gosh, it seems like that was the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
I think he's a relatively gracious winner. Some people might think his comments are a little political and a little polarizing. You know, Bradley Cooper's a good actor. He was very good. Rami Malek, Bohemian Rhapsody, he was the best thing in it. Viggo Mortensen, people talk about, that's kind of a career achievement award. Boy, everybody loves him. Mm-hmm. And it got made because he agreed to be in it. And then John David Washington, who's a really talented actor, has been in Ballers forever. He absolutely won't win. Because to be in the pool is good enough.
Yeah. All right. And so the winner is?
The winner is, it's Christian Bale. Christian Bale won the Critics' Choice. He won the Golden Globe. It's Christian Bale.
Best Actress.
Best Actress. Here we go. For a female actress in a leading role. Emily Blunt in Mary Poppins Returns. Glenn Close in The Wife. Olivia Colman in The Favorite. Lady Gaga, A Star is Born. Melissa McCarthy, Can You Ever Forgive Me? So let's talk about, this has a lot to do with the world of awards. The Wife is good. Little seen.
Mm-hmm.
Its existence and its ongoing existence, 10 or 12 years in the making, totally dependent on Glenn Close. Glenn Close, along with Jonathan Pryce. I know who Jonathan Pryce is, but I don't think a lot of people do. So not a huge, giant name. She's the name. She was such a good winner at the Golden Globes. So I would have told you, absolutely, it's Lady Gaga. It's Lady Gaga all the way. Some people might feel, gee, her first movie. The song is for sure going to win, so she already wins. She's won by being part of it. Of that list, far and away, because of her music success, she's the biggest star. I don't know. Wow. I would vote for Lady Gaga because I really thought it was fantastic.
Mm.
Mary Poppins Returns, I would say no. Olivia Colman, people love her because of The Crown. I don't think it's been widely seen, so I would say no. It's almost this process of elimination.
Mm.
Melissa McCarthy was very good in Can You Forgive Me, but also not widely seen. And Glenn Close, if not for the attention already received, would be out completely.
Gave a great speech at the Golden Globes.
Between the two of them, Glenn Close and Lady Gaga, oh, man. Critics' Choice, they tied. I don't think that our colleague Jason Ball likes to point out that there was a tie 50 years ago between Barbara Streisand and Katharine Hepburn for Barbara Streisand's first movie. So it'd be like amazing if it was for Lady Gaga's first movie.
You have to pick, Sam.
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga. All right. I won't go through the entire list, but obviously we got to go to Best Picture.
Yes. So Best Picture, I'm going to give you two lists. They will dovetail. Screen Actors Guild, which is cast. So it's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Stars Born, Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, Crazy Rich Asians. For Crazy Rich Asians, which is well-deserved, the nomination is the win. Black Panther, I thought that was such a big cast and everybody was so good in it.
Mm-hmm.
Stars Born, Black Klansman, the two that won't win are Black Klansman or Bohemian Rhapsody and Crazy Rich Asians. So they're all out.
Why?
If you talk to critics, most people thought Bohemian Rhapsody was kind of C+.
Right.
Rami Malek was good,
right.
But they thought the whole thing was kind of perfunctory. And Black Klansman has really good performances. But I think Black Panther would really say something. And it you know, my gosh.
But so would Crazy Rich Asians.
So would Crazy Rich Asians. But Black Panther to me is weightier.
Mm.
And I think Crazy Rich Asians, the nomination is the win.
Okay.
And also, this is probably a very minor point. The leading man in Crazy Rich Asians, who's, you know, very handsome and very good, is not really an actor. He's a TV presenter.
Well, he is now.
Yeah, he is now. That's for
he
sure.
was a BBC presenter before.
Okay, now for Critics' Choice, which is a longer list,
yeah.
Roma was ineligible for SAG because it wasn't SAG members. So here's Critics' Choice's list. Black Panther, Black Klansman, The Favorite, First Man, Green Book, If Beale Street Could Talk, Mary Poppins Returns, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice. And the thing that the Academy did several years ago is this is an accordion category between 5 and 10 nominations. It's got to be 5, can be as many as 10, doesn't have to be 10. Sometimes you think, oh my gosh, there's absolutely 10. Sometimes there's only, you know, 7 or 8. And I think you have to include Beale Street because the performances were so great. Oh, man.
and so let me just understand, sure, about Roma, because it's not in English, is that an issue as well? Isn't it in the best foreign language?
It's the best foreign language, and it was not eligible for a Golden Globe because it's not in English.
Okay.
But for the Oscars, that's not true. For
Okay.
In theory, it could win Best Foreign Film and Best Picture at the Oscar. But they want to win Best Picture. Oh, man.
It's not fair. So why don't we say top three?
Top three, thank you. Top three, Black Panther, most widely seen, huge cast, great performances, and I really like it. If Beale Street Could Talk, more merit, maybe? I mean, it's a much smaller movie, but just indelible performances. And then my dilemma with Vice as a movie, it was kind of a little too in love with itself.
Mm.
It's too self-referential, so I'll take that out. Star is Born, only dilemma is the first half is so much better than the second half. That might dink it a little bit. Roma is very ambitious, and Roma has really, really campaigned. And I think that might produce a backlash to a degree.
Mm. They've campaigned too much.
They could, arguably. Some people, we don't want Netflix to steal everything. We don't want them to take over everything.
Mm.
Boy, Frank, I am really torn. I'm going to say I'm torn. I've said this for a long time. I think if Black Panther won Best Picture, the auditorium would erupt. The viewers would love it. Everybody would be thrilled. And because of that, it probably won't win. But gosh.
But it sounds like that's your choice.
That's my choice.
Black Panther.
Because I think Best Picture, you know, and this goes back to sort of Titanic. What was something of really fantastic quality that had a broad appeal?
Hmm.
And I would say of this entire list, and again, I'm not a Marvel person at all.
No.
But I thought it had extraordinary quality, and everybody saw it.
All right.
So we'll see. I could be completely
There are so
mistaken.
Many other categories, right, and we could go through all of, yes, them, but you actually have a life that you have to get back to. So,
sure.
Sam Rubin, thank you,
pleasure,
so much. This really gave us a great insight into the awards process, and I can't thank you enough.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Thanks again to Sam for his terrific insight. I usually invite you to see my conversation with the guest on the TV version of Frank Buckley Interviews this coming weekend, but we're actually airing my conversation with the sleep doctor, Michael Bruce, on Saturday and Sunday. So if you tune in at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday or at midnight this coming Sunday, January 20th, you'll see the sleep doctor and you'll learn how to overcome insomnia. I hope I didn't put you to sleep with this podcast. What did you think of Sam's selections for some of the top awards categories? Let us both know on social media. I'm Frank Buckley TV on Twitter and on Instagram, and Sam is Sam on TV on Twitter and Instagram. Tag us both. We'd love to read your comments, and maybe we'll share them on the morning news. A new podcast drops every Wednesday, and if you enjoyed today's program, I hope you'll consider subscribing or checking out another interview in our archives. We've got 130 conversations for you to choose from wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for joining me today, and until next time, I'll see you on TV.